Yes, welcome back to a brand new episode of Matt Chats, and it's been a while since I've done an episode of Matt Chats, so I thought I'd better drag in someone who's been on before, but I don't think we've gotten his full story across, because, you know, he has a lot of characteristics and a lot of momentum in the world of sport, I guess you'd say, and he's just turned the big 3-0. Jacob Lansley, welcome back to Matt Chats. Hello.
Hello. My third episode of Matt Chats.
Yes, it is.
Am I a co-host yet? How many episodes do I have to do before I'm an official co-host and we change the name of the show?
What would you change the name of the show to?
Oh, no, that's up to you. You've got the creative control.
Fair enough.
Nice to be back, Matthew. I've done one each year. So first one was 21, then 22, and this is 23. So maybe you can drag me back for a fourth in 24.
A three-peat.
It was good enough for Brisbane.
Yeah.
In the AFL, Hawthorn, Richmond didn't win three in a row. They won three and four, but yeah, why not?
Yeah, well, great to have you back. And look, there's so many things that I think we haven't covered over our time together on Matt Chats. A big show planned. We've also got the Matt Chats quiz a bit later on, so looking forward to that. You've been a part of a quiz before, so excited to delve into that. But yeah, looking forward to chatting a bit more Landsmere sort of stuff. So, exciting times. You're in your E3 Mantle shirt. I know you're recording Waffle World after this.
We are, yes, Wednesday as we record. So that is Waffle World Wednesday. Looking forward to that a little bit later. Always nice to talk about a Sharks win and West Perth loss, so Brett Rapone won't be in the best of moods. But I feel like we know a lot about me. I'm not sure there's an awful lot more to delve into, Matt. So you'll have to give your best today.
Oh, look, I mean, I've been doing a lot of writing down, a lot of questions. The first thing I wrote down was age 30, so I do know that.
Yeah, well, thanks for that. That was a nice celebration a couple of weeks ago. I've just recovered.
Just recovered, yeah. There was a good turnout. There were lots of people there. I thought you might have hired a few actors.
Oh, there might have been a couple that were planted there, but that was just to keep people on their toes. It was a lovely day, beautiful weather, and, yeah, unfortunately, time doesn't stop for any of us until it does, Matthew. So, yes, 30, nice little milestone to tick off.
Jacob, we know that you love your sport. You do it for a living at the moment.
Yes, very lucky man.
Yeah. Now, what age do you think that you basically started to remember sport? Do you have a first memory of sport, whether it was footy or cricket or something else?
It was footy for me. The first full game of footy I watched was the 2001 Grand Final, which was Brisbane and Essendon, and that was Brisbane's first of three. But the first full season of footy I watched, when I really remember becoming immersed in it, was 2002, and that was sort of my introduction to sport. I wasn't a sporty kid at all, really.
Oh.
If you can believe it. My first few years, I was a massive Pokemon, Digimon fan.
Yeah, I was that way inclined.
And sport had little or no part to play in my upbringing. And then one day, my late mother was a massive footy fan. She grew up with the oldest of three daughters and came from Victoria. And if you're in Victoria, you love your football because that's religion over there. And she got dragged by her father to the football every week. And so at a certain age, I think Mum said she was nine when she first went. So one day Mum sat me down and said, well, my dad showed me footy at this age. It's time for me to show you. And I sat down and sort of watched a full game and fell in love with it pretty quickly. And cricket came after that, so I had a full season of watching footy, and there's always a bit of post-season depression, isn't there?
Mm.
A bit of sadness when footy finishes, and it was like, well, what am I going to do? You know, 6 months until we get back to footy season. One morning I flicked on the television. I'll never forget it. I was at my dad's place. My parents had separated, and I was at my dad's place, turned on the television, and there was this strange sport on the television. Fielders spread out on this massive oval, and Mark Taylor was commentating. I still remember the voice. And it was Mark Harity, South Australian fast bowler, was bowling, and he said, there's two slips and a gully. And they showed a panoramic of the field. Two slips? Why do they call them slips? Do they fall over? And I was just intrigued because I had no idea what the sport was at that point in time. So I sat down and I watched it, and by the end of that day, I was hooked on cricket, and that was me done. The rest of my childhood was spent watching sport and being involved in sport, and here we are now.
Did you get into cricket that season, or did it take a little while? Or?
So I didn't play cricket that season. That would have been 02, 03. So my first season of cricket was as a 10-year-old in 03, 04. So I would have played cricket for 20 years this October.
Right. Has it always been Willerton?
Yes.
For footy and cricket?
Yes. Yep. I played my first season of football in 2003. And my first cricket season was 03, 04, and I barely missed a game. And that was at my own request, because a lot of, when you're young, your parents take you away for trips and whatnot. And I said, if you're taking us away for trips, it has to be in that 2-week break over Christmas and New Year, because if I'm not back for the first game after Christmas, I'm not going to be a happy camper. And football, yeah, I was lucky. I only had one really serious injury that robbed me of any time on a footy field. So I played an awful lot of junior sport. And Barrender Reserve got a fair working over, which was a local ground and still is for cricket these days. So very nice ground too.
Always an off-spin bowler, or was there...
I actually bowled medium pace,
oh,
which there'll be some people listening, if they know me, will know that that's basically what I still bowl. I don't turn the ball at all. So I used to bowl off a little run. Very first game of cricket, I came this close to a hat-trick with my first three deliveries that I bowled. So I actually wicket-kept. So back then, everyone had to have a go at wicket-keeping and you'd move around the field. So first game, we got bowled out for, I don't know, 20 or something. I predictably made a duck. And then we went out to field and I was given the gloves. I don't know why. The coach had some sort of suggestion that he thought I had good... good hand eye or good technique with the wicket keeping gloves. Anyway, after 10 overs, 15 overs, the coach realised he'd made a huge mistake and gave the gloves to somebody else. And I came on to bowl the first over after the drinks break. Wicket first ball, bowled. Second ball, you couldn't get out first ball at this stage, missed the stumps by a cat's whisker. And then the next ball, another wicket. So I had 2 for none off my first three balls, and I think I should have probably retired at that point because it would have saved me a lot of pain and heartache after that.
Yeah, you would have thought, how good is this sport?
Well, it is a good sport. It's a very frustrating sport, and there are days where you sit there and you think, well, why do we play this game? Why do we give up our Saturdays to get belted everywhere or to get rolled for not many? But, yeah, it's a sport that I fell in love with pretty quickly, both sports and then subsequently other sports, tennis, don't mind a bit of golf, basketball. You know, you end up getting to understand the idiosyncrasies of the sports, and it makes it fantastic to watch and be involved.
So when you started playing footy, what were you, a big full forward or a ruck?
No one's big at 9 or 10, Matthew. No one's got size or presence about them in junior sport at that age. You're probably waiting till you're 13 or 14, which is when I realised it was time for me to go, because puberty wasn't kind to me. I didn't fill out. I grew tall, but I was very tall and slender, which is still my build. But where did I play most of my football? Early years, you just play wherever. You just want to be on the ground. Dad always tells a funny story. We played at Bull Creek one day at Beasley Reserve, and it absolutely teemed down with rain. Very cold, very wet. And apparently I got taken off the ground in the last quarter because I was blue. I was that cold that I had to be taken off the ground. And I must have been 9 or 10 or 11 at that point. But yeah, I just wanted to be on the ground. So eventually when I got my height, I played as a back pocket, a bit of a stopping defender. And then when I grew a little bit more, I went in as a ruck. But I had the ability to run, not anymore, but back then I could cover the ground pretty well. It was a decent long-distance runner. So I'd often play on a wing and just run around and chase someone who was a bit shorter. I could have been the preeminent tall running wingman that we see now.
Wow.
But unfortunately, I didn't have any talent to go with the running. But that's sort of what I played, and I could go forward. I didn't kick too many goals, but that was okay. I broke my wrist when I was 14, and that sort of ended my junior footy career. I played for another year, but... was never the same after that. So that was me done, and just cricket, which I still play to this day.
Fair enough. Did you break it playing?
I did. Yeah, Cameron Eardley of East Fremantle, who I've got to know pretty well now, and he didn't actually know it until last year. We came together after the prelim final, and I said, "Oh, you know, can I play junior footy against you?" And you broke my wrist, and he went, "Oh, I felt so bad about that. It wasn't an intentional breaking of the wrist." Don't get me wrong, it's just a fierce tackle that unfortunately ended with my wrist in an uncomfortable position, and my bone snapped. So that was 2007, and I was playing great footy that year. I was probably playing the best footy I'd ever played, and the coach actually came up to me before the day began and said, if you play a good game today, you'll be in the East Fremantle development squad, which would have been, what, under 14s, maybe under 15s? I thought, how good's this? I'm going to play footy. I'm going to play for East Fremantle. And then Cameron Eardley broke my wrist, and... That was the end of it. He went on to play for East Fremantle, 150 games, and I'm sitting up there broadcasting Cameron Eardley. Maybe you did me a favour.
Clearly, that's ruined a potentially strong footy career, Jacob.
No, I think to be honest, I don't know where I would have gone from there, but it probably saved my parents a lot of kilometres driving me around to various waffle grounds. So, yeah, probably did me a favour more than anything.
Now, after that, obviously, you clearly got a love or a thought that you could maybe be a commentator or had an interest. What brought that about, and what sprouted the idea in your mind?
I've always wondered exactly what it was. Just hours and hours of sitting in front of a television and watching the game and taking more of an interest than most. If you ask my friends or family, they'll tell you that I would listen to the commentary more intently than what was actually happening in the game. I think it was Eddie McGuire and Dennis Cometti did Friday Night Footy back then when Channel 9 had it, and those two really impacted me because I'd listen to them. And then there was Tim Lane, Anthony Hudson. There were some great commentators on TV back in those years. And on radio, it was Glenn Mitchell and Wally Foreman who called for the ABC, and that was who I listened to. A lot of games were broadcast into Perth on a delay on television. So if you wanted to find out what was happening in the game live, you had to flick on the radio. So all of a sudden, I was just listening into the nuances of commentary. Where's the ball? What's happening? And the descriptions and the crowd noise really captured my imagination. And I think radio more than television probably captured my interest. And that's the medium that I work in now. But the ability to describe something to people who can't see it. There are people who are visually impaired who can't see what's happening in the game. Their only way of finding out what's happening is to listen. And I've been lucky enough to meet some people who are visually impaired who thank you for the task that you actually perform that gives them a platform, a lens into the game. But it was probably radio more than television that really hooked me, and slowly but surely I thought, all right, this is how I would structure a broadcast. It was probably 13, 14 when I decided, all right, I'm actually going to give this a genuine crack.
Fair enough. Do you remember the first time you had a crack at commentary? Was it just watching the TV, or was it down at a local park, or how did it all happen?
I'm not sure exactly when it would have been. It would have been at home. It would have either been a game on the television on a Friday night or over the weekend when Mum and my sister were out. I would have just sat there and called it off the television into my little tape recorder. Or it would have been a PlayStation game that I owned. I would have called that as well. As far as the first proper game of football that I called at a venue, it was actually a grand final in 2009. So I'd finished playing. 08 was my last year of footy, and 09 I was the boundary umpire for the team that I'd played for. Gets to the final series, they get proper official boundary umpires, so you're relieved of your duties. And we got to the grand final, we're playing Adderdale, and I put my hand up. I said, they were going to film it, so they were going to film the grand final. I said, I'd like to commentate it. I know the players, I know the opposition, because I've played against a lot of those guys over previous years. And I said, I want to commentate it. So I commentated that game, Willerton won, and I've still got that DVD somewhere at home. I wouldn't have watched it for a long time, but I've still got that DVD somewhere, and that's where it all started. The next year, I ended up calling every game that my team played, under-17s, 2010. Every game that we played that year, I commentated, and that was sort of a stepping stone into what was to come after that.
Fair enough. So that was the first full game. Were you disappointed you didn't play one more year to get the premiership?
No, because I wouldn't have made that team. I say that to everyone, because there were two players who missed out on the day and didn't win the premiership, didn't get a medallion, and I would have been one of those players. I wasn't big enough to be a ruckman. I wasn't good enough to be a forward. I was only a bit part defender. I didn't have the size anymore to compete with those guys or keep up with them on the lead. So, no, I wasn't going to make it as a footballer. I wouldn't have been in that team. So, next best vantage point is up in the commentary box at a windy and cold East Fremantle Oval where that grand final was.
So, that was your first footy gig. When did cricket begin, or was that just of your own accord as well?
Well, that was mainly of my own accord. And I know there'll probably be a story that you share about we actually crossed paths many years ago, and not that we knew it at the time, but I used to call, I had a tape recorder, which I've still got at home somewhere, and commentated the last 2 years of junior cricket. So basically it was a thought process from commentating the footy, I'll commentate our cricket matches. So when I wasn't batting, I'd be sitting there with the tape recorder on the sidelines, often in full batting kit, ready to go if I was in next, and I'd commentate ball by ball our games. So when we're in the field, I wasn't going to stand in the slips with the tape recorder, so we didn't worry about it then. But then I'd get my teammates to commentate while I was batting. So if I was out batting, one of my good mates would commentate, and would end up doing the full game across probably four or five of us. So I managed to drag them all in, and then we had this great opportunity to preserve our junior cricket matches. Yeah. Because we had commentary of all the games, and I've actually put together highlights since. So there's a little highlights package of every game from the last 2 years, and that was sort of cricket commentary. And then going to the Wacker when we're in school holidays or on a weekend when we weren't playing, and doing ball by ball and sitting there in the printable stand and commentating sessions or days in the end. I thought, well, And it's an unusual way to go about things. I accept that. But the only way to actually improve and practice these things is to do it. So I'd sit there and I'd commentate a one-day game or a... There was one day I actually sat on the grass bank and called a session of test match cricket.
Really?
Yeah, between Australia and the West Indies. That your man, Doug Bollinger, took five for that day.
Would have been a few people sitting around you going, what's going on?
Probably, but I wasn't talking very loudly, and it was pretty obvious what I was doing. I had a tape recorder in my hand, so yeah, it would have got a few looks, but I didn't care. I was like, well, the only way to actually practice this is to do it. And without it, I wouldn't be where I am now, so I'd do it all over again. But it was just practice. Practice makes perfect.
Do you remember the first game you did at the Wacker with the tape recorder? Or is that too much of a blur?
No, I do. It was 2008, so it was actually before I called any footy out of ground. It was a game between WA and New South Wales, and WA lost by 5 runs. Very close game, sort of one of those old-fashioned one days where 220 is a good score. I remember Phil Hughes playing that day, the late Phil Hughes for New South Wales, and he was a teenage prodigy at that point, and he smashed McGoffin and Dory and others all over the place and got 40 very quickly. Marcus North made 95. It was last out for WA. And he almost got them over the line, him and Brett Dory, and they just fell short. I remember we finished the game and we gathered at the boundary's edge, and Marcus North was doing a television interview for Fox, and he walked past and said, oh, well played, mate. He said, oh, thanks, mate, and walked past. And as a kid, you know what it's like. Marcus North said something to me.
Yeah.
And that was sort of the introduction towards it. But it was such a good game, and you were so immersed in it by calling it. You're like, I want to go back and do it again. And sadly for my mates, we did it many, many more times after that.
Would you do the full 100 overs?
Pretty close. I think we missed the first few overs because we got there a little late.
Yeah.
We used to catch the bus. But I would have done close to the whole game. Yeah. Yep, Bo Casson, who's now a WA batting coach, he was sitting in the crowd that day. He'd just played his first and only test for Australia and then didn't get selected for the Tour of India and wasn't selected in that game for New South Wales. Such was the talent that they had in their squad. So, yeah, a few memories from that game, and that's where it all started.
And then when did it transition that you eventually got the call up to the famous Sport FM to have an opportunity to call there?
That was quite a while later, to be honest. It was... first day of Shield cricket I called was 2017.
So a lot of work on the craft.
Yeah. And probably times where you think, it's not going to happen. You know, why am I bothering with this? There was probably a year or two there where I didn't go to the Wacker anymore just because I was working or there's no point. You know, what more can I do? And you think, it'll be another 3 or 4 years at Sport FM before I get a chance to call cricket. You know what it's like. You bide your time. You wait for a chance. And it was by chance. So I only started at Sport FM as a full-time employee, or close enough to it, in January of 2017. And I was actually doing, at that point in time, I was doing the sports line shift and the drive shift. So I was doing the sports line shift on my own, and then I was doing the drive shift with Jared Morrell, a previous guest on this podcast. And there was no show that day because the cricket was on at the Wacker. So I did the sports line shift panelled for the first couple of hours. I would be at the Wacker now if I wasn't working, so I'm going to go down to the Wacker. And I was sitting in the printable stand, and I took a photo, and I sent it to the late Colin Minson, the voice of WA Cricket. And I sent it and said, nice view out here, Minnow. And just sent it and, you know, put my phone down. Anyway, phone rings about a minute later, it's tea time. And Minnow calls, and he says, since you're here, would you like to come up to the box and call the last session? Absolutely, this is the realisation of a dream. You couldn't get me up there fast enough. I was wearing thongs and shorts, so anyone who's been to the Wacker and the members area, you're actually not meant to be allowed in without a collared shirt and enclosed shoes. So I had to, Minnow just sort of ushered me in past the gatekeeper, who he knew pretty well, thankfully. And then I was calling Sheffield Shield cricket about 40 minutes after I got there to the Wacker. And it was probably the best thing that could have happened, because if I'd have been told a week out, you're commentating this game, I would have been sweating and I would have been nervous as hell. But the fact that I was in the box and just away was the best thing that could have happened for me. And I still remember the first ball of Shield cricket I ever called. Trent Copeland around the wicket from the members end at the Wacker to Ashton Turner, and I'm just hoping for a dot ball. Just get in, call the ball. Ashton Turner plays it off the back foot, punches it up to mid-off, hairs off for a quick single, fielder picks the ball up, throws the stumps down, and I reckon he was in by an inch. It was a very tight run out, no replays, and I've called it. And Rick Evans was next to me, former international umpire, and he said, "Well, that was well called. You've described that pretty well. And if I can call that, then surely I can call an over, I can call a session." And I was away. Ended up doing a couple more days of that game. It was Adam Voges' last game for WA as a player. WA won by 6 runs on the last day. So it was a memorable game of cricket, and one I'll always remember back in March of 2017.
Very nice. And now you're just the voice of WA cricket.
Oh, well, Minnow sort of passed on that title. I remember we were sitting at Burrendale one day, and Minnow planned to retire, and he planned to retire quite a few times. Sadly, he fell ill and passed away a year or so ago. But he sort of handed it to me. He said, "I'm anointing you the title of voice of WA cricket." I said, "Oh, come on, Minnow. That's always going to be your title." And I always think of Minnow as that person. But, yep, now I get to call ball-by-ball Sheffield Shield Marsh Cup. We did a big bash game this year. We travel around and call the games interstate. It's probably the highlight of the job, really. I love footy. I love footy as much as the next person, but cricket's my sport. And if you said you can broadcast cricket 12 months of the year, I probably would. 6 months will do me for now. But yeah, going to the SCG and the MCG, the Adelaide Oval a couple of times, it's very special. It's very special to sit at those major Australian sporting venues, even though they're empty, and call Sheffield Shield cricket.
Now, plenty more to chat about, Jake, because I've got plenty of questions that I've written down, and we've still got the Matt Chats quiz as well.
Oh, I always worry about that quiz. I don't know where it's going to go.
I think we didn't do one with you and Jared. You did one with Kempe, but
we did one with Kempe, and I gave Kempe about a 3-0 head start, and I ran him down.
Yeah, I did have a listen back to that the other day, and Kempe led to, would have been 2-1 or something.
Yep.
And Kempe thought, "I'll be a nice guy, go to AFL," and you just showed no mercy.
No, and I won't. So, Kempe, when you listen to this podcast, next time, don't poke the bear. Next time when you've got the foot on the throat, put the foot down.
Now, we were talking about your commentary stuff. What about the best commentator you think you've worked with so far? Obviously, you've worked with a few.
I have. Well, it was a dream to work with Glenn Mitchell, who we have as a colleague here at Sport FM, a great Sporting Lives host and waffle host. That was a dream come true. I remember being very nervous that first day that I called with Glenn, because you listen to someone for years and you sort of get a feel for who they are, and then you're sitting across from them and you're almost overwhelmed by it, you're daunted. And those first few games, I reckon I barely said a word to Glenn. During the game, after the game, you just sort of call the game and then you'd go. And you just want to make a good impression. So, I mean, Glenn's the answer, but to elaborate a little bit more, you're trying to gain the respect of Glenn as a hero of mine, and you're thinking, what's he thinking about my commentary? Am I good enough? I'm sort of second-guessing myself. I'm wondering if my commentary is actually any good, or whether he's thinking, who's this bloke? They've just plucked some young bloke who's got no ability. Then one day we're at Bassendean Oval, and we were there, and it was Glenn and I. Glenn got there first, I got there after him, and he shut the door. I'm thinking, oh, okay, what's going on here? And he said, "I just wanted to say, before the other two get here, that I really rate you as a commentator. I really like the way that you broadcast the game. You've got a lot of ability, and I think you've got a future." And, I could have felt 12 foot tall at that point to hear that from Glenn. And Glenn's been nothing but a solid voice in my ear about little things. He never gives me a complete breakdown of commentary, because I think he allows me to call how I feel is best to call. He'll always give me little hints, all right, you should do this, or you need to get the score more, or if there's two players with the same surname, you've got to distinguish who they are. And those sort of things really, really helped. And it was amazing growing up. I listened to Wally Foreman and Glenn a lot. Then you're working with Glenn. I never got to meet Wally, sadly, who passed away in 2006. But I've got to meet both of his sons, Glenn Foreman and Mark, who I still chat to Mark quite regularly. I spoke to him just the other day. And you think it's amazing how life sort of brings these people in. You grow up listening to them, and then you meet them, and that aura that's attached to them sort of disappears a bit, because that's how things work. You meet your heroes, you meet people you're sort of daunted to meet, and then you realise they're just another human being like you. But Glenn is the best that I've worked with, and still one of the best broadcasters in Australia, I think.
Yep, fair call. What do you say is tougher to call, do you think, cricket or footy?
They're very different. I think anyone, and I mean this with the greatest deal of respect, I think anyone can call football. If you have half an idea of the game and the players in it, you can call football. But can you call a full day of Sheffield Shield cricket on your own without anybody giving you a breather interstate? Can you have the energy? Can you have the enthusiasm? Can you have everything that's required to call a day of cricket and not bore the listeners and bore yourself? Cricket is a much tougher sport to broadcast because there'll be passages where nothing happens. You can call half an hour and two runs will be scored and there'll be no chances. It'll be dead bat in defence, bowler runs in, and you've got to find something to enlighten the listener. You've got to describe the crowd. You've got to describe the setting that you're looking at. Or you start delving into the stats of the players that are out in the middle, or you just explore a thread of something that's happening in cricket at that point. Football, it's always moving. There's always something to describe. Even the most one-sided of games can sound exciting and interesting because something will always be happening. Cricket is a very challenging sport to broadcast, and I challenge anybody who says it's easy to sit there and broadcast a full day of cricket.
Very fair call. What about in terms of your preparation? How much preparation do you put in? Do you just roll up and just start sprouting out names, or is there hours of prep?
Probably the latter. Yeah, I'm quite diligent when it comes to preparation. That's just how I was always taught, that if you're going to broadcast a game, you need to be prepared. Because the worst thing can be is you sit there and you don't know any of the players or anything about the teams. If you're sitting there and you're coming in completely blind and cold, you're in all sorts of trouble. So if I don't call a game well, it'll be because I just didn't call well on the day. It won't be because I didn't prepare. And you've seen my notes and how much I scribble down on a piece of paper, particularly for football. And I don't use most of it. It's actually there for memory retention and trying to remember as much of it as I can. But preparation is key. If you prepare, you know the players, you can pronounce the names, you know the numbers for footy, it makes your job so much easier because you're not looking down at the page, then looking back, oh, I missed two handballs, oh, there's been a turnover, because you're actually able to follow the player. All right, that's Smith, who's just given it to Jones, and Jones has kicked it back into the corridor for Warner. And all of a sudden, you know who's got the ball and where. You don't have to sort of, you know, be up and down with the commentary. So preparation's key for me. Others will see it differently, but for me, if I haven't prepared, I'm no chance of calling the game any good. So that's where I start. Preparation well, then the broadcast will probably go okay.
Now, you've done AFL and Waffle. Would you say that just because the Waffle has less coverage, is the Waffle tougher to commentate because you wouldn't have as much, I guess, known about the players as regularly?
We're exposed to Waffle a lot on our station, so I'd say no. At the start of every season, there are new players, so you don't know much about the new guys, so that's your challenge. All right, you know about 15 of the 22. Well, let's learn about the 7 that are new. And then you see them once or twice. Okay, he's a forward, he's a midfielder, he's a ruckman, and you sort of note those kind of things. AFL, never forget the first game that I did. It was a good night for your Magpies because Collingwood beat West Coast by a point in an elimination final. The pace of AFL football is so much quicker. The ball whizzes around, the skill level's better. You think it'll be easier to call because you know the players, they're exposed to you regularly on the television and on radio. And then the game starts, the ball just starts pinging around and all. There's four quick handballs in a chain. I can't describe all of that. And you learn eventually, well, it's just not possible. You can't describe those four handballs, Smith to Jones, back to Smith, Jones. You're not going to be able to describe all of that. So you've got to find out what's important. All right, quick chain of handballs, ball comes to Smith, who kicks it inside 50, and Kennedy's taken a big mark.
Yeah.
So Waffle is a bit slower than AFL, and it probably makes it a bit easier to broadcast because you can get your head around what you're going to say. But a lot of the time, the words don't come out in the right order, or you just don't quite nail what you're trying to say. That's why football is a difficult sport to broadcast. And you've got to have the right inflections and the right energy, because you can't get excited about a big tackle in the middle of the ground on the wing. I mean, that doesn't necessarily have a big outcome on the game. But a screamer in the goal square in the last quarter to win the game might. But you've got to have the right energy for the right moment. Because if you try and scream and shout, and that's what annoys me about modern-day commentary, is too many commentators will scream and shout for the sake of it. Find the right times to get excited and elevate your voice. So there's so many different things that... And that's probably what hooked me back to your previous question. When you're young, is the actual art of commentary. There's an art to it. It's not just sitting there and talking about what's happening in the game. There's an art form to describing what happens, and trying to master that art is something I'm still a fair way off doing, I think.
Now, I don't mean to delve back on it, but that game, the West Coast Collingwood game that you did commentate, now, being a big AFL fan myself of Collingwood, I can't imagine how you would have gone trying to commentate West Coast in that situation in an elimination final where they go down by a point, and maybe when you're in the game it's easier, but leading up to it, was it in your head like, how am I going to contain myself when West Coast are going at it?
I was worried, I won't lie, because I never broadcast an AFL game in my life, and it's West Coast, it's a final. I actually trained myself to go, right, I'm actually going to be more excited for Collingwood goals than West Coast goals, because I've got a known bias, and you should never admit this as a commentator, but I'm an Eagles fan, and I think professionally it's not an issue. I've called games where West Coast have played, I've called waffle games where Eastern Mantle plays, and you just put it to one side. The game's fast enough that once the game starts, you haven't got any time to think about, oh, who's just kicked a goal, and oh, I'm an Eagles fan, that's a great goal. You just call the game as you see it. You're trying to work out where's the ball, who's got it, and describe the game. I'll never forget. So I called the last moments of that game. Collingwood won the game. Brilliant match. And I packed up all the gear. We finished the broadcast. And I got to my car. I walked all the way around back to my car outside Optus Stadium. It was only when I opened the boot of my car that it really hit me that West Coast had been beaten by a point and our season was over. Because I was so immersed in describing the game and the whole experience that the result was actually secondary. So I managed okay. But of course, there's always that thought that people are listening, oh, he's an Eagle supporter. So I guess it's just an external viewpoint of you and what you do as a broadcaster. I like to think I'm fairly impartial on air. You don't see me slapping the desk when West Coast miss a goal. But on air, I don't think there's any issues with bias. It's perceived bias as much as anything. People think, oh, you know, he's an Eagle supporter. I've had people tell me they think I'm a Dockers fan. Oh, you're so pro Fremantle. I'm actually not a Fremantle supporter. But maybe you go the other way. Maybe you're more harsh on your own team, and then you try to actually be positive towards the team that you dislike a little bit more.
Yeah, fair enough. Yeah, I don't know how I'd go if Collingwood were in an intense match. Obviously, Eddie McGuire would have dealt with that issue a little bit.
Press red for Ed. Yeah, well, that was one of the big stories of my childhood when Eddie did Collingwood games on Channel 9, because they had a lot of Friday night games in that 5 years when Nine had the rights and Eddie called them. Tim Lane walked from Channel 9 because of Eddie's stance on doing the Friday night games for Nine as a Collingwood man and a president. Yeah, you've got to balance it. But passion is good. Passion is good in sport. It's good in commentary. You've got to toe the line somewhere along the line.
Yeah. All right, we'll take a little bit of a break from that because we're going to do the Match Chats quiz.
Okay, hit me with it.
Well, what you need from Match Chats quiz is an opponent. So I do have an opponent.
Is it you?
Oh, look, I'll have to wait and see. Maybe I'll shop. I'll play the little quiz opener.
I knew this was going to happen. I knew this was going to happen. I saw you two just conspiring a little bit earlier to work through this.
So Ethan Quinlan has walked into the studio.
Timing was immaculate.
That worked extremely well.
Was that planned? Has Ethan been sitting outside
He's
for
been
an
outside
hour
or for like 5 or 6 minutes? Mm. Yeah.
Well, it's been painful.
Welcome to you.
Thank you, Jack.
Nice to have the team back together. It's only because we're recording this. Other people will hear it, so I want them to think that we get on, which we do.
We do get on,
but occasionally we butt heads around here, don't we?
Oh, look, it's
early mornings.
It's important to know that Ethan, you're here for the quiz?
Yes.
And that's it.
Oh. So you've come all the way back.
Yep.
You've gone to uni today after breakfast. We're recording in the afternoon. And you've come all the way back for one segment.
Yes. Because I love you.
That's dedication.
I mean, look, he can sit there and view the rest if he wants, but he'll have to be in silence.
Has it been touched on the fact that our nice clothing that we're wearing, you and me, Matthew?
It's not a visual medium.
I know, but
it's not a vlog.
I know, but it'd be nice for our lovely listeners to know that Matthew and I have made an effort.
He's already started.
We've got our ties
this
on.
It's your responsibility.
We've got our shirts tucked in. We've got lovely shoes. We've got lovely pants. And what are you wearing, Lansmere?
I'm wearing an Eastern Mantle shirt.
Mm-hmm.
Lovely blue
and
white.
That's a Waffle World
And
kit.
I'm wearing tracksuit pants because I'm more than entitled to.
Debatable.
All right, well, we are here for the Match Chats quiz. Cause
hit me with it.
It is a big part of the quiz. So I'll let you know the segments. There are a few segments that we have in play on the Match Chats quiz. We've got AFL. We've got cricket. We've got film, music and TV. That's one segment.
So is Ethan going to get any questions, do you think, or not?
Look, I did say your back's against the wall. So he's going to have to really pull something off. We've also got All Audio, Who Am I, and Something Else.
Come on.
Your buzzer will be your name. Okay. So
can I say Jacob and can he say Ethan?
What if I forget my name?
No.
Okay.
So test out your buzzers, please.
Ethan.
Jacob.
Thank you.
You don't have to yell into the microphone. Yeah, we're just having this conversation on the podcast.
Sorry.
Broadcasters don't. People don't want to hear people yelling into a microphone.
Then stop yelling.
You stop yelling.
Okay. So, Jacob, it's your episode, so you can choose which category you'd like first.
We'll go film and TV.
Film and TV. He's really giving you a chance there, Ethan.
Yep. I'm giving him a start because I'm backing myself later on to nail the sports stuff.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I actually don't mind my film and television knowledge.
Film,
as well.
Music,
and TV. Music. I like my music. So yeah, I'm more cultured.
All right, our first question: how old is Tom Jones?
Jacob.
Yep.
80.
80.
Oh, does that mean I get a go now?
Of course.
Wait a minute.
75.
I was going to say, does he have to get it correct, or does he just have to get close?
No, so if it was closer to, I would have notified before it.
Right.
You were very close. The answer was 82.
Oh. 82.
Now, I knew he was at least 80.
But no one got it, so you get to choose which category we now go to. You can stay there if you want.
Let's stay there.
All right. Who plays the character Ted in Ted Lasso?
Jacob.
Jacob was in first.
No, I don't know. Ooh. I don't know.
Do you want to have a stab?
Got no idea.
Right.
Ethan will know this one.
I don't actually. I thought you were going to say Ted from Ted the Movie, and of course I was going to say Seth MacFarlane. Yeah,
yep.
But
I was going the exact same way as Ethan on that one.
So you're going to have a stab?
I've heard his name multiple times, but I keep forgetting it.
Are you going to have a guess? Are you giving up?
No.
Could be one ahead here. That's a failure on both of our parts. This is why you don't come in too early. You've got to hear the question. I see it. I watch a lot of game shows in the afternoons because we've got spare time in the afternoons in our profession. And I go, you see them jump in, and they're like, oh, you silly bugger. And now I'm sat here and I've just answered that too early.
The answer was Jason Sudeikis. That was the answer.
I've got no idea who that is, and I would not have guessed that if I had another 70 cracks at it.
Jacob, do you want to stick with film, music, and TV or go somewhere else?
No, let's go to sport.
Go to sport. AFL or cricket?
AFL.
AFL, okay.
Give Ethan a chance.
All right. Name the one Collingwood player to have scored more than 10 goals this season so far.
Jacob. Brody Majacek.
Well done.
Thank you.
1-0. First to six, you're in trouble, Ethan.
I know.
Where do you want to go now, Jacob? Are you staying at AFL?
Let's put a gap there between the two of us. Let's go cricket.
Cricket, okay. Well, there's no chance in cricket, I wouldn't have thought. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Who took the most wickets in the 2009 Ashes series?
What the hell?
Who took the most
Ethan.
Wickets?
This will be good. Mitchell Marsh. No, hang on. No, Mitchell Johnson.
No, you've...
Ashton Agar?
Jacob. Peter Siddle.
I like that you thought you'd go with someone that I like. You thought I was...
Well, the bowling attack then would have
Shane
been...
Warne.
No, he was retired. Mm. You would have had Johnson. You would have had... Horrods as a spinner, but he got dropped for the last two tests, so it wasn't him. You would have had Hilfenhaus. Was it Ben Hilfenhaus?
No, well, I did ask who took the most wickets in the 2009 Ashes series.
So it was an English dude.
It was Stuart Broad.
Oh, he's big, he's bad, he's better than his dad. He's Stuart Broad. That's a Barmy Army tune that they sing when he gets up and about. If you've ever been at an Ashes test, he's big, he's bad, he's better than his dad. He's Stuart Broad. It goes off, actually.
Nice. It's like
I don't mind the Barmy Army. They're pretty good.
Where do you want to go now, Jake? Will you stand with cricket?
I just missed out on it. Let's stick with cricket. I can't go through this podcast without getting a cricket question right.
Who opened the batting for the Brisbane Heat in the BBL 12 Grand Final?
Ethan. Josh Brown.
Two people opened the batting.
And old mate. Was I half right?
Jacob?
It was Josh Brown and Sam Heaslett.
Do I get half a point?
No, you don't, but I was impressed you got one.
He was in quick on Josh Brown,
yeah,
wasn't he?
Well.
He was one of the stories of the BBL.
I like Josh Brown. He's my favourite.
2-0. So, Jacob, do you want to stick with cricket or do you want to go to one of our other categories?
Give me the other categories again, just so I...
AFL cricket, film, music and TV, all audio, Who Am I or something else?
Let's go Who Am I. I love a good Who Am I.
You're right. Jacob Lansbury.
Now,
yes, I am. Thank you.
There are five clues in this.
Yeah.
If you get the answer within two clues, you can get 2 points, which would be phenomenal if you somehow pull that out. But
so I'm assuming that your early clues are like, I'm born in 1964.
And you go, I got it.
And I was raised in Victoria. They're the first two clues, aren't they?
Okay.
I am ready.
Clue. I'm 38 years old.
I'm Jacob Lansmere.
That's not nice.
Sorry.
Does that count? That's him out, isn't it?
No, he didn't buzz in. That
There we go.
I'm 38 years old. I'm one of the biggest sportsmen worldwide.
Ethan, I'm Cristiano Ronaldo.
Ethan Quinlivan just nabbed 2 points on a Who Am I.
All right.
Wowee.
38, I'm one of the biggest sports stars in the world. Well, yep, okay.
Wowee, Ethan.
That's pretty well done. Credit where credit's due.
Where do you want to go, Ethan?
Yep, up to you now. Yeah, you're in control. Remember, I've only got 28 minutes here. So
that's true. Let's go. Okay, let's go to all audio. Let's go to that one.
Okay. You've talked him into it.
I'm going to play a piece of audio. You can buzz in at any time. You've got to tell me who is speaking in this piece of audio.
You know, I've done what I set out to do, which was be a great entertainer.
Samuel Jackson.
Wow.
So have you taken a 3-2 lead?
He didn't swear.
I have.
Samuel L. Jackson swears more than any other Hollywood actor I've ever seen, and he didn't swear.
Yeah, look, I'm shocked.
I was listening for a sports star. I'm thinking, is that a basketballer? No, it's Samuel L. Jackson.
It's all audio.
The great man.
Mm. Ethan, do you want to stay at all audio?
Let's stay there.
Okay. This next question, I'm going to play you something, and you got to tell me what song it is. Okay.
Every chance it'll be Taylor Swift.
Yeah, I reckon it will be.
Okay, so let's. What song is this?
I know the song, but not like that. No.
No.
No idea.
No ideas. Okay, this is the song that it was.
Let's go! Uh-huh. Oh. Dynamite by the... BTS, that's it.
Dynamite.
Yep, no, sorry.
3-2.
Mm-hmm.
Do you want to stay with all audio or are you moving to another category?
Let's go back to AFL. I think Jacob needs a point.
Oh, Jesus. That he's done a Kempy here.
Yeah.
He's done a Kempy.
Don't open the door, it'll get shut.
Okay. Which team finished 13th in 2009?
Which team finished 13th? 13th in 2009. I don't know. He finished bottom two, Richmond and Melbourne. Carlton weren't far behind. There's only 16 teams back then. Jacob, West Coast.
Ethan.
This is an opportunity.
It is.
Hurry up.
I'm processing. St. Kilda. No, hang on. They made the grand final. The grand final.
Was it Fremantle?
No. It was Sydney.
Sydney?
Yeah.
13th.
I was close.
I would have never got that. Sydney very rarely missed the finals, let alone finished 13th out of 16 teams.
Ethan, do you want to stick with AFL or you're going to go?
Let's stick to it.
Oh, my God.
It'll be the longest quiz in the history of sport.
Who currently wears number 23 at the West Coast Eagles?
Jacob. Alex Witherden.
Well done. 3-3. Could be coming in for an epic.
Well, yeah, if anyone should know jumper numbers, it should be a bloke who writes them down and broadcasts them sometimes.
Very nice. Now, Jacob, you can choose where you want to go now.
Let's stay with AFL. We're on a roll.
Okay. In 1997, how many clubs were in the AFL?
Jacob. 16.
Port Adelaide entered that year. So, yes, there were 16.
Oh.
Gee, Ethan, if you'd had a bust in, mate.
Pretty simple premise. Say your name, answer the question.
I got carried away.
You did. Port Adelaide's first year, 97. Three.
And you could wrap it up here, Jacob.
Yeah,
if you
I could.
This right.
I could.
Do you want to stick with AFL? Do you want to go to cricket?
Let's go cricket.
No.
Let's put Ethan out of his misery, hopefully.
Okay.
That's not very nice.
Well, he could get it, and it could bounce back in my face, couldn't it?
Okay, here we go.
I'm nervous.
Damien Fleming.
Oh, the great man.
Is how many years old?
Jacob. Just turned 50.
Dog.
No.
Ethan.
Yep.
He's got a bit of grey hair. Jacob said he just turned 50. He doesn't get these things wrong. 52.
52?
Yes.
It was 53.
Really?
Yes.
I swear he just turned 50.
53.
Biologist. He's born either... His birthday is either the day before or the day after mine.
Interesting fact. Born in Bentley.
Yep. Same hospital as me.
In Perth.
Yep. West Australian.
Didn't know he was a Western Australian.
Same hospital as me.
Are you sticking with cricket or are you going to go to somewhere else?
Stick with cricket, please.
Stick with cricket. Okay. Glenn Maxwell has currently played how many test matches?
Ethan. Four.
Jacob
to
six.
Wrap it up. Six.
Oh.
It was seven.
Seven.
It was seven.
And
very,
they've all been
close.
In the subcontinent.
Yeah, bizarre, isn't
Sri Lanka,
it?
India and Bangladesh. Wouldn't have played any tests in Australia.
Where are you going now, Jacob?
Let's stick with cricket. This is
you're not
bad.
Going very well at cricket.
Oh, well, neither are you, champion.
Well, I'm not picking cricket.
Sean Tate.
Yes.
Has taken how many test match fifers?
Ethan.
Jacob.
I think
it
was Ethan
Jest. Yeah, he was.
23.
Oh, God.
Sean Tate took how many test match fifers? Zero.
Zero.
Test match fifers, zero.
5-3, Jacob Lairsey wraps it up. Bit of a trick question
there.
Yeah.
Yeah, he didn't play a lot of test cricket. He would have only played maybe...
Three tests.
And the last was at Perth.
Was it?
Yeah, against India. Or it was there that day. He got out off an inside edge. He wore those... You remember those pads, the aero pads that were really aerodynamic? He got inside edge of his pads and it popped up and the bowler took it running back over his head. It went that far off his pad. And that was his final act in test cricket.
Nice. Now, Ethan, thank you for coming in for the quiz. You're welcome to stay and sit there for the remaining 20.
Good job. Do you mind if I stay and sit here for the remaining?
Just turn his microphone off, please.
Yeah, thank you, Ethan.
No worries, Matthew. No worries, Jack.
Anyway, Jacob, well done on winning the quiz.
I'm glad that I did because I had more opportunities and Ethan is a budding broadcaster. I'm more established than him, so I should be getting those answers correct.
Did you get a little bit nervous when he took the lead at 3-2?
No, because like Collingwood, I get better the longer that time goes on. So it was just easy my way into the quiz. And yeah. No, well played to Ethan. He did well.
He did better than we expected, I think. All right, well, back into what we were talking about before. I think we were... Last thing we spoke about was you commentating the West Coast game. But I've got many more questions.
Okay, well, make it quick because we're on the clock now.
Yeah, we're on the clock.
I'll be short with my answers.
What's the dream job? What would be the... If you could maybe grab someone's job in the industry at the moment, what would it be? Where would you go?
Oh, anyone who works for Fox Footy because they get paid an awful lot of money to sit in a studio. No, in all seriousness... When I started, I said this was the job that I always wanted because all I wanted to do was call one day of Shield cricket and one waffle game. And I did that within 3 weeks of one another in 2017. And I said anything after that's a bonus because that's all I wanted to do. And as time goes on in life, you further your horizons and you want to achieve more. But I've been able to do a lot here that I've wanted to do and then some. And only when you're sort of looking back on what you've achieved and thinking about what's next, you go, gee, I've been really lucky to do a lot at Sport FM. I would like to do this at a commercial level or at a national broadcaster level. So 6BR, ABC, on a more national level would be absolutely fantastic. But this is a terrific job. And anyone who is listening and thinks, oh, I can't make it, have a go at it because it's worth it. It is absolutely worth it. And some of the people you'll meet and the experiences that you'll get will be far greater than sitting in an office from the age of 25 and doing a boring office job. So chase it.
What about, would you ever transition into television if the opportunity came about? Or is that just something that you're not sure about?
No, I would happily go into television, but I feel more comfortable in front of a microphone on radio than I do in front of a camera. I haven't done a lot of it. So maybe if I did more of it and became more comfortable, it's a little bit more daunting when you're in front of a camera, because if you look nervous, people can see it. If you're nervous on radio, people can't see you. So you can cover it by sounding really authoritative and confident and bubbly. But if you're nervous on television, they'll see your hand shaking when you're talking. They'll see the sweat on your brow. So I'm not against television. That's the glamour side of broadcasting. But radio's my medium for now. I'll happily stay there if someone's willing to employ me.
What commentator would you liken yourself to? Who do you think you're a bit like?
Not sure, really. I mean, I've modelled a lot of my stuff on Glenn. So probably Glenn, to be honest. He's the one I listened to the most as a kid. I've taken a little bit of everybody, though, and I've always wanted to be authentic as a broadcaster, not sound like somebody else. Because I think the easy thing to do is, oh, I'm going to try and be Bruce, or I'm going to try and be Dennis. But you can't be them, because they're brilliant at what they do. And when they started out, they were maybe trying to be someone else, but then they eventually found their own style. So I took a little bit of Dennis, a little bit of Glenn, a little bit of Tim Lane, who I think is probably our best sports broadcaster. Been at it for 50 years. Bruce is very good too. But you just take a little bit of everybody and you try and weave it in, and then you find what works for you. And it takes a long time to actually feel comfortable in your own skin, because a lot of the time you are trying to sound really, really radio savvy and not be yourself. And then eventually you realise people don't want to hear somebody who's, oh yes, well, I'm kicking to the forward line. If you're trying to be Dennis Cometti, you're not going to be Dennis Cometti. So yeah. Be yourself and be comfortable as who you are. And then it takes a while, but it makes it so much easier once you feel comfortable in your own skin.
Now, you've had the opportunity to interview a lot of big names. I've written some down here, and I've probably missed a lot.
Okay.
Justin Langer, Ryan Harris, Brendan Favola.
Fev. Yes, I interviewed Fev when he came over to Perth a few years ago for a speaking circuit. Yep.
Nat Fyfe.
Yes.
Adam Gilchrist, Glenn Mitchell, Caleb Sarong, Brian Lara, Ricky Ponting, Tony Shaw, Shane Wywoden, Wayne Clark. Is there anyone I've missed there that you think he hasn't mentioned him?
Oh, there probably is. Yeah. But, and I mean this with the greatest seal of respect, because it's a privilege to interview anybody.
Mm.
But I wouldn't know how many interviews I've done now in 6 years of live radio. But there's a lot of people that you interview. And some interviews linger in your memory and others disappear from the conscience pretty quickly. But all those names are great. There's probably been a few more as well. I wish I had been lucky enough to interview Shane Warne. We tried to get him when he was here a few years ago during COVID, and he was in quarantine. We thought he's just locked in his hotel room. Surely he'll come on. We couldn't get him, and he passed away last year in 2022. So I would have loved to interview Warney, but I think you covered most of them there.
What about, was there someone you were most nervous to interview? Or were you always pretty comfortable once you were there?
No, you do get nervous, particularly in those earlier years. I remember we interviewed Adam Voges after he retired, and I watched Adam Voges' whole career as a fan, and you're still a bit of a fanboy when you start. So I'm interviewing Adam Voges, talking through his entire career, basically, and you're thinking, how good's this? I'm interviewing Adam Voges on the radio. And then we interviewed Sean Redditch when he retired, and you think, this is amazing. Well, I interviewed Ricky Ponting. I was pretty nervous because I thought, how am I going to get to do this? It's more if you actually get their number. I got Dennis Cometti's number maybe 3 or 4 years ago, and I messaged him because I was too daunted to call him, because I would have just heard his voice. So I went, I probably would have hung up the phone. And I messaged him, and I'll never forget the feeling of getting that name pop up on my phone and seeing him say yes, and I'll come on and I'll chat. And it was at very late notice, so I moved something out of the run sheet to work him in. So interviewing Dennis for the first time was fairly nerve-wracking, because he was, along with Glenn, an idol and a hero, and you know, to interview Dennis and meet him a couple of times has been pretty special.
What about, has there been a hardest person to interview? Anyone that you've been like, oh, that was really tough, they didn't give much?
Yeah, Jared and I did an interview once with Nathan Bassett, former Adelaide Crows player, who was, and still is, I think, an assistant at Port Adelaide.
Yep.
And football coaches can be very difficult to get things out of, because they give you very short answers or they just give you nothing. And he gave us less than nothing on this particular day, dead batted every answer or every question with his answer, and gave us absolutely squat. And it was just like, well, what's the point of this interview? Basically, we should have wrapped it up after about 2 minutes. We also interviewed young Sam Taylor, who's at the GWS Giants, and safe to say he hadn't had a lot of media training when he started. He was very shy and very nervous with his answers, and when they're very short answers and you haven't really given enough thought to your next question, that's pretty awkward radio. So there's a couple that come to mind.
Spoke about your favourite commentator to work with. Well, our favourite commentators overall, asked you if you could put a team together. I don't know if you had time to do that properly.
Because I'm old now, there's so many that you've probably missed from back in the day. But Dream AFL commentary team, Dennis Cometti and Tim Lane. Tim Lane is without peer, I think, as a broadcaster of sport. And Glenn agrees with me. He worked with Tim for a long time. Economy of words. So the ability to say something and describe it, but in less words than somebody else who might describe it in three sentences, he'll do it in one. And Dennis, well, all the wit, all the smarts in the world, great voice. Those two together, and I'm not sure if they worked a lot together because they worked at different networks. They're both at the ABC for a little while, but Dennis Cometti and Tim Lane. Christy Malthouse is the boundary writer back in the day. She was at the forefront of Saturday Night Football. So I could only think of Malcolm Blight as an expert. Always enjoyed Malcolm Blight's frankness. Him and Robert Walls together are always good value because they didn't pull any punches. But experts I struggled with because I didn't always pay as much attention to the experts. I was more listening to the play-by-play, so I struggled with that. And then you wanted cricket as well?
Yeah.
Well, Richie Benno and Bill Laurie, without peer. Richie just, he gave the pictures gravitas. It's not about, and again, like Tim Lane, economy of words. You don't have to say what we can already see when you're working in television. You've got to add to the pictures, and that's what Richie always did. Bill had the excitement. Gone, got him, yes. And, you know, you had guys like Tony Gregg, who was fantastic, Ian Chappell. I mean, really, you could just put the whole Channel 9 commentary team in. I like, these days, I really like Nasser Hussain. I think he's excellent, former England captain. Mike Atherton's very good as well. I love those two together when we get the Sky Sports commentary. Pommy and Bangwa from around the globe, I think he'd be in there as well, and probably Ian Bishop. Ian Bishop, former West Indian bowler, and the famous, remember the name, when Carlos Brathwaite hit the four sixes in four balls in the 2016 T20 World Cup. So they're probably the names that come to mind for cricket.
Now, couple of final things before we do finish, because I know that you've got a very important episode of Waffle World to get to.
They're all important, Matthew. You can't really rate them in order of importance.
Well, another important episode of Waffle World. A new thing that we're doing on the podcast, because obviously there hasn't been an episode for a little while.
Yes.
There'll be regular ones now.
Yeah, what season are we in, by the way?
Oh, it's all just moulded together. It's just all one big entity now.
Oh, dear.
But what I wanted to do was... each guest I have on, I want them to maybe give a question for the first question I ask the next guest. Obviously, you don't know who that guest is going to be, so it could be anything. So do you have a question that you want to provide? It could be about anything, anything at all in the world. It could be, what's your favourite colour? You can choose what you'd like me to ask the next guest on Match Chats.
I love the origins of a nickname. So whoever your next guest is, I want you to ask them, what are the origins of your nickname?
Okay.
I famously asked, and this is probably the stupidest question I've ever asked anybody. I interviewed Jeff Marsh, former Australian Test opener and West Australian great, father of Sean and Mitch Marsh. And I was very young. I was pretty inexperienced. It was one of the first MC, it might have been the first MC gig I ever did. And I was interviewing Jeff Marsh. I got up, I shook his hand, spoke to him briefly before, just introduced myself. And I asked the first guy, you know, Jeff, nice to have you in the room tonight. You know, what's it like to be here? Oh, yeah, it's great to be here. I said, now, Jeff, I'd like to start by asking you, Swampy, famous nickname. I said, Swampy, how'd you get that nickname? And just turned and blankly looked at me. And his eyes pierced through me at that point. He said, Marsh, Swamp. And you could have knocked me over with a feather at that point because I was absolutely done. That was, and I've been reminded of it ever since. Whenever people mention Jeff Marsh, oh, what's Jeff Marsh's nickname, Jacob? Oh, Swampy. Yeah, so sometimes if you don't prepare or you don't put two and two together, you can be made to look silly. But I do like a good nickname origin story, even if it's obvious like it was on that one.
Very nice. And finally, before we go, for any young people listening, what would be a tip you could give them if they want to be a commentator, and what would be the best advice you could provide them?
Practice. Practice makes perfect. Don't be embarrassed by sitting there and talking to yourself, essentially. That's what commentary is. It's an unusual practice. It never looks particularly comfortable, but that's what commentary is. We sit in front of a microphone, we talk to ourselves, and we imagine that we're broadcasting to minions, thousands, hundreds, whatever it is. Don't be afraid to look silly. Don't be afraid to make a mistake. If you listen back to your commentary, don't edit it, because that's something I used to do. Don't edit it to make it sound better, because people actually like authenticity. They like the fact that people make mistakes, because you and I make mistakes. Ethan makes mistakes. We all make mistakes, and people can actually accept you making a mistake. If people think that you're silver and polished and very, very well-spoken, well, then you're probably painting an inaccurate picture. So don't be afraid to make a mistake, and don't edit out a mistake. The most important thing about commentary, and I'm a stickler for this, because I think the way that the modern generation is you have to sound excited all the time, and everything has to be loud. And if you can't tell me where the ball is, who has the ball, and the score, all the basics that have made commentary what they are, there's no point in broadcasting. I listen to some commentary now, without mentioning particular styles, and you'll go 5 minutes, you don't know what's happening in the game. Now, what's the score? Who's in front? We're in football season at the moment. We're in cricket. Oh, well, what's the score? I heard you talk for 4 minutes about that boozy end of season trip in the UK. Well, what's the score? We need to know the score, and we need context to what's happening in the game. So that is the most important thing as a commentator. You need player identification. You need to know who has the ball, and you need to identify where the ball is. And then once you've done that, everything else will flow, because you know where the ball is, you know who's got it, and then you'll be able to weave in the one-liners or whatever makes your commentary style what it is. So the basics of commentary are the most important. Start with the basics and then broaden your horizons.
Jacob, it's been an absolute pleasure welcoming you back on the Matt Chats. I've enjoyed it. I hope you've enjoyed it as well.
It's been a pleasure, Matt. I don't expect a call back anytime soon, but if you get stuck, then clearly I'll be the first person asked. Hello to all of your listeners as well.